The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Okay.
Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Yeah. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Once she grabs, she won't let go. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole.
None of that soft stuff.
Rock, rock.
None of that heavy metal stuff.
Rock, rock, rock,
just a little bit of jazz.
Rock, rock, rock,
what do you think?
Just I like love that. It. That was great. Thank you.
It would help if I turned on the microphone.
Big laughs out in the hall.
That's the way you start a show, right? I don't know. It is New Year's Eve. So welcome to it, everyone. I got to say, I pulled something that showed up. You know, I sell them on Facebook, which I'll explain the dilemma in just a moment. But one of the cool features about it is they have this memory thing. You know, where they'll show what you posted on this day, you know, however long ago it was. So last year. And last year at this time, I had posted this song. Hold on, I'm looking for it now because I just downloaded it. I thought I downloaded it. Oh, I know. I didn't put it in there yet. Okay, so I'm going to play this for you just because it is it is really funny, except this song, it's not a song. It's a bit. It's like a comedy bit. And it was, I posted it on Facebook a year ago today. So it was New Year's Eve 2020 into 2021. And all I can think is, you know, that 2021 was just about as bad as 2020. There were a couple of minor differences. I mean, at least we were rid of Donald Trump for most of 2021, right? Except for the first 20 days. But boy, the effects linger. So, you know, we're dealing with that. But everything else, when you listen to this bit that I'm about to play, you'll understand that seriously, this line that I stole from a comedy show that I watched the other night, 2021 was not just a continuance of 2020. It's a 2020 variant. And it just shows the good stuff that the good stuff that was like silver linings for 2020 really didn't exist in 2021. You know what? I'm ruining it just by saying this. So let me share it with you. Again, just for a place, when they say 2020, think in your mind 21. All right? Okay. Take it away, internet guy.
Head into the next. We invite you to give a big fuck you to 2020.
Oh, shit. Hold on. I screwed up the beginning. Let me play it from the beginning. All right, goes like this.
As we wrap up this year and head into the next, we invite you to give a big fuck you to 2020.
But not just any fuck you, a fuck you for a cause. Let's start with a giant fuck you COVID-19.
Fuck you for taking my job. Sorry, furloughing my job.
Furloughing? Fuck you.
Fuck you for closing his school.
Yeah, fuck you.
Fuck you for canceling our wedding.
Fuck you to the toilet paper hoarders.
Fuck you to all the people in 2020 who said all lives matter.
All lives will fucking matter when black lives fucking matter.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck you, Derek Chauvin.
And a double fuck you to the killers of Breonna Taylor.
Yep. Arrest those fuckers.
Speaking of murderers, fuck you, murder hornets.
Murder what?
Murder hornets.
That's a thing?
I've had it with these motherfucking Zoom calls on this motherfucking computer.
Fuck you, New Zealand. You think you're better than us? Well, you are, but fuck you anyway.
I don't care who you voted for. Fuck this guy.
Fuck you,
that was Mitch
Karen.
McConnell.
Fuck you, Karen.
Fuck you, Karen.
2020. Fuck you.
Fuck you for taking RBG.
And Kobe.
And John Lewis.
Mm. Fuck you for taking my grandmother.
2020. Fuck you!
And says this year, everyone, could you do with a little extra help? Text 1-877-EFFTHIS and you donate $5 to a mental health. to some mental health cause. I it ran out too fast, but I will post that video on the blog today at NicoleSandler.com/12-30-21, because that's today's date. I wish they would update it for this year, but then again, there's not a whole lot that was different. It's the same shit, just with a one at the end of it instead of a zero. So anyway, fuck you, 2021. Bring on 22. But I'm so afraid that it's just going to be a continuation of the continuation of 2020. All right. It is Thursday. Howie Klein will be here because it's business as usual here. And again, what else for survivors, by the way, who are very vigilant about staying safe from the COVID. So he's at his house. I'm at my house. Hey, kids, let's put on a show. So Howie Klein will be here. And not only that, he's bringing along a special guest today. Her name is Summer Lee, and she is a real progressive running for Congress from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania's 18th congressional district. So we'll meet Summer Lee today. Yes, different president, minor improvements. Yeah. So anyway, but before we get to that, I want to talk about something that I hinted at yesterday, but I didn't have time to get into it because we ran the Marcy Wheeler interview, which took most of the hour. But yesterday, as I was so busy preparing my show, well, it was pretty much already done. And, you know, I filled in for Brad Friedman on the Bradcast for the first 3 days of this week. I'm not doing it today and I'm not doing it tomorrow. So I can breathe a little bit. But yesterday, when I did not have time to deal with this, I got sucked into a Facebook Messenger conversation. So here's what happened. I don't routinely accept new friend requests on Facebook because I already hit that 5,000 mark and that's all they allow you. And then I whittled it down so that I'd have some empty slots. And I save those for people that I know. Like, for instance, any of the regulars in the chat room, should you say, oh, we need to connect on Facebook, that I can accept your thing. My Facebook is open, so you can still follow the page and you can see everything. There's nothing on there that's private. Plus, I have the Nicole Sandler Show page as well. So it's there. But anyway, there's this woman. Her name is Bridget. I'm not going to give you her last name, but she's been following me for a long time and she interacts and I don't know. So finally I accepted her friend request. I don't know, 6 months ago maybe. And for the second time yesterday, my phone rang, this weird phone, and I realized she was calling me on Facebook Messenger. Don't do that. I don't care who you are. Don't do that. I don't take calls on Facebook Messenger. So that's what happened yesterday. She called me. The first one I declined, and then she did it again, and I declined it again. And I messaged her, and I said, what's up? I don't do the Facebook Messenger calls. Don't call me. So I said, what's up? I don't do Facebook video calls. And she writes, oh, sorry about that. Good to hear from you. I'm doing pretty good and extremely happy. I have a good news to share with you. Guess what? I said, what is it? She said, I was just wondering if you heard anything about the Department of Health and Human Services grants. I said, no. She said, really? They're having a promotional program to help citizens, both old, retired, disabled, and workers with cash, $150,000. I wonder if you got your money yet because I saw your name on the winners list. First of all, winners, that should have been the first red flag, right? So I write back, where? This sounds like a scam to me. I've not heard anything about it. She said, no, it's for real and legit. You know I hate hoax things. I don't know anything. I don't know anything about this woman. Are you serious? You haven't heard about it? And I said, I'm sure. Can you send me information on where you saw it and that my name was on it? And she said, I think it's part of Life Opportunity. All you have to do is contact the claim agent in charge to claim yours. Also, do you know how to do that? And I said, no. And then the more I'm reading this, I'm like, this is a scam. I don't know what she's got there. But so I did a Google search, and I said, I just did a Google search, and it says, Department of Health and Human Services gives grants to certain groups and organizations, but not individuals. And she said, no, that was then. I think they just started giving out to individuals as well. And so again, I asked, can you send me the info where you see that? And her response was, I will never let you know about this if I didn't have the money. I know how you feel. I felt the same way in the first place. Not until I have the money delivered to me at my doorstep by the USPS man. And then she said, I saw your name on the delivery list when I was told to sign on the list when I received my package. Well, when have you ever seen other names who are going to, of people who are getting deliveries when you sign for a package, right? And I wrote back, seriously, that's weird. On the delivery list? Can you give me the info where you found this or who you contacted? And then I said, and they sent you cash? And she wrote back, here's the main representative agent Facebook link. And she sends me the link. It's m.me/agentwilliams202. And she said, you can text him. He's always active to receive all beneficiaries' texts. And he typically replies in a few minutes. So I go to the link and I look at it. And there's a picture there of Mike Pompeo. The profile picture is of Mike Pompeo. And all it says is Agent Williams Clark. And below that it says government organization. Ooh. And then she says to me, it was delivered to me by the FedEx delivery men. And I said, they delivered cash to you? And she said, yes. I said, how much? And all you did was contact him on Facebook. She said, yes, just text him. And then I found a thing online from the Department of Health and Human Services. It's at hhs.gov. And there's a whole page on scams. And it says, avoid grant scams. And I sent it to her. I said, please read this. This is not real. And then she again responded, I got this. That's why I have to tell you. And again, I told her the government would never send cash. And she sent me a picture. Oh, shoot. Did I not? Did I put the picture up here? I thought I had the picture here. I guess I didn't save the picture. But it's a box with a handful of, you know, you've seen them in movies, like wrapped stacks of cash. But the only bills that were showing were singles, were $1 bills. And I wrote back, I said, the government would never send cash. And $1 bills, this doesn't make any sense. Did you open the packets of cash to see how much is in them? Is there any paperwork enclosed? And again, I said, the picture on his account is Mike Pompeo. And she didn't respond to that, but she responded to my, is there any paperwork enclosed? She said, yes. When the delivery man brought the package, I had to sign some papers. I said, can you show them to me? His account is phony. It says government organization, but not which one. Then there's a URL and a phone number on that Facebook page, neither of which work. And I said, I wonder what you signed. I'm afraid you've been scammed. And she said, I can't be scammed since I got my winning money delivered. And again, I said, how much money? Did you open the packets and what did you sign? She said, yes, I got $150,000. I said, in cash? You counted it? All those packets with $1 bills outside? You don't think that sounds fishy? And an aside away from our, you know, I posted some of this online on Twitter yesterday and somebody did the math and said, that if it was all singles, it would have weighed like 335 pounds. It would have been 6 feet tall or whatever. I mean, the whole thing makes no sense. And then she said, I got $150,000, a paperwork to confirm I received the package myself. And then I said, you counted it? All those packets with $1 bills on the outside. She said, that's what I think at first, but I think they have no choice than to do that. And I said, how so? They have checks. And she said, I don't know. And I said, you counted $150,000 in cash. She says, all I know is that I got my money delivered to me in cash. Yes. So it went back and forth like that. And I said, you don't think that's strange? Is there a return address? No return address. I said, watch out. You've been scammed. Maybe the money is counterfeit. I don't know, but this isn't right. You should call the FBI. And she said, why? I said, how in the world could you think this is legit? $150,000 bills delivered in cash. The government doesn't operate that way, and they certainly don't conduct their business on Facebook. And she writes, really? I said, really? And then I said, I don't have time right now. I have two shows to produce today, but you've stumbled onto something nefarious. And she said, okay, well, get back to me later. So I start going back to my work, and I can't get this out of my mind. So I contacted the guy on Facebook again because I just couldn't let it go. And let me share with you the conversation I had with him. And this is really lovely. He said, let's see. I said, again, it says Agent Williams Clark, a government organization. And I said, hi, I was just told you can help me get a Department of Health and Human Services grant. And he says, hello, welcome to the online site of the, and then in parentheses, Department of Health and Human Services, DHHS current program. Let's start here to get you signed up for the program. How old are you? And I said, first, I have a few questions. Who are you? Do you have an official U.S. government email address? This is not the online site of the Department of Health and Human Services. I need to see proof you're who you say you are before I give you any information. And then I added, your profile picture is Mike Pompeo. And still nothing. And then I said, so now you're not answering me? He said, we don't give out any information like this to individuals who are to claim their money. Are you ready to receive your money? And I said, excuse me, you say you're with Department of Health and Human Services. I want proof before I give information. He says, what proof? I said, an actual .gov email address rather than Facebook. And he said, well, we don't give that out. And I said, I don't believe you. What's your scam? And he said, what are you talking about? And I said, the U.S. government doesn't just offer people free money on Facebook. And then he replied, but I think the person that introduced this to you already told you that she got her money. So I said, yes. So please tell me how this works. And he said, you have to fill out a form. I said, please tell me, please send me the form. So then he starts asking questions. Full home address. So I gave him my post office box address. Date of birth. So I gave him a fake birth date. Occupation. I said, radio host. He said, email address. I gave him an old inactive email address. Monthly income. I made something up. Marital status. Married. And he said, okay, social security number. And I said, sorry, I don't share that on Facebook. And he said, I want you to know that your information are secure with us here and we won't sell it to any third party. Okay, now this is the part where anybody with half a modicum of common sense would say, scam, and go away. And then I wrote, if you really worked for Department of Health and Human Services, you wouldn't be asking for this information on Facebook and certainly wouldn't ask for my social security number. And why is your profile picture Mike Pompeo? And he wrote back, okay. And that was the last I heard from him. And, you know, I tried goading him a few other times and he has not responded to me since. I did report the page. But by the way, so I go back to this woman, Bridget, and I said, she said, get back to me later. And I said to her, you gave him enough information to steal your identity, home address, date of birth, etc. She said, my identity isn't stolen. I said, not yet. You gave him all the information he's now asking me? And she said, yes. And I said, bad move. You gave him your social security number? Yes. I said, you've given them enough information to steal your identity. Nothing is free in life. This is a massive scam. So why are you so damn in thinking this is a scam? He's a good man and he doesn't lie. She knows this because she probably got the same message that he sent to me, which is, we won't share your information with anyone, I promise. He's a good man and he doesn't lie. And I just wrote, OMG. Who is he? He has a picture of Mike Pompeo as his profile. No proof he's with the government. And you blindly gave your personal information. And she said, but he did as promised. I said, I hope you're right. I fear you're wrong. You don't think there's anything fishy about $150,000 delivered in all $1 bills, no return address? And the best is, she says, I think it's just God's doing because I believe God brought this to me. And I said, really? Okay, you listen to my show, God, really? She says, yes, I think it's God. I know it's God. I said, good luck then. Maybe your God will keep you safe. This is a scam. I don't know how it works yet, but I will. And she said, I'm getting a new home. And I said, you gave him your social security number? Yes. And then I said, you're an idiot. You've been scammed and you willingly gave them all that information. You didn't get $150,000 in real US dollars. I can promise you that. And they're about to rob you blind. And she writes, how could you in your fucking life call me an idiot? And I said, just read this exchange. There's your answer. Oh, my God. And then I posted, not the whole thing, but I posted about this on Twitter yesterday. And my feed was throttled by people who are telling me their horror stories, that they, too, were taken like this. Someone else went on Facebook and found there are a number of these agents who all have pages, and they talk about the winnings. One of them, some other agent, I found it today, and he has a picture of the publisher's clearinghouse going to someone's house to give them a prize. It's just astounding. David, you're standing here. Do you, yes?
Can I tell my story?
What? Pick up the microphone. I don't know what story you're talking about.
My story of the internet scams that they've emailed.
Oh, you
me.
Mean the ones about you masturbating?
Yes.
Okay, sure.
As you know, I've gotten numerous emails. Well, first of all, when I have a Zoom meeting,
yes.
When I finish, I turn my cameras off.
Yes, you do. That's, the camera is never on in there except you, unless you're on a meeting.
That's number one. Number two, I do not look at pornography.
No, you don't. You look at boobs occasionally, pictures with tits, but that's about it.
Number three, I do not masturbate, period.
Right. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have no need to.
Yes.
Thanks to you.
Okay.
At any rate, I have repeatedly gotten these emails saying, sorry, but we have bad news for you. Just recently, I was able to penetrate blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
And we now have video of you, and I am quoting here directly, passionately masturbating to some of the questionable sites that you frequent.
Yeah. But the point is,
and
Dave,
send me $1,700 in Bitcoin.
Yeah, right. But the difference is, all right, you know that it's a scam and you weren't taken in by it. But this person was, and he's a good man. And she thinks she has $150,000 in cash delivered to her because by the U.S. government, because God
wanted her to have it.
Yes.
I guess God wants me to masturbate passionately.
I guess so. I don't know. So, but then check this out. So, somebody, I'm not going to give the name. She said, someone told me that story. My dad has given away his entire life savings and checking account to a quote woman he met online and only communicates with online. We have tried to make him stop and even went to the police. I called the state's attorney in the state where she lives, attorney general, and no one can do anything as long as he's still cooperating with whoever this is. When my brother and I ask for a number so we can talk to her, he says we can't because she can't speak or hear and can only communicate online. This has been a 2-year journey. For the last few months, he says she's trapped in Dubai. Yes, I said Dubai, with COVID, after having gone there a few months ago to invest all the money he sent her in Bitcoin. I don't know what to do to help him. I'm like, oh my God, what a nightmare. And then she said, he screams at us when we try to tell him what's going on. There's a real lady in the town he says she's from, so we had a deputy do a wellness check on her. She's there, and she's fine. She remembers chatting with my dad in a chat room a long time ago, and later, her credit cards were stolen. The deputy told my dad what he found out, and dad said, well, there must be another lady with that name in that town who was talking to a different man with his same name in his town. And she continued, he asked my brother for $4,000 a few weeks ago because he said she's in a COVID concentration camp in Dubai and she needs money for food because they're only feeding her salad and she's starving. He even told my brother that he called the U.S. embassy to get her released, although he was probably fabricating that one. This person knows how to play on his loneliness and sympathy to get him to give up almost everything he owns. And it goes on and on like that. I can't tell you how many people I heard from since I posted just a tweet yesterday. I tweeted, oh my God, I just had this long online chat with this someone who I think was a listener who got totally taken in. And the stories have not stopped coming. So now Joy in the chat room, when I got in, she was already in the chat room before the show started. And she's like, I got scammed today. She got taken by the sewing machine scam. And I'm like, oh my God, I did too. Last year, when we were stuck at home, Allison was here and she wanted to sew. But if you remember at the beginning of the pandemic, nothing was available. Like, because everybody was sold out of everything. And she wanted a sewing machine. So I wanted to get her a sewing machine and I couldn't. I looked on Amazon. I looked on all the fabric stores. I looked everywhere. There was nothing. And then one day I see this ad on Facebook. Don't ever buy anything from an ad on Facebook. I'm telling you. And it said, clearance sale. We've got hundreds of these Singer sewing machines that, you know, normally sell anywhere from like $1,000 on up. And they're $99. And I'm like, I can do that. So I ordered her one. And they sent me the tracking information. And I knew it was coming from China. And I'm following the tracking. And it took about a month. And finally, it's the day. It's going to be delivered. And so I think I was on the air. And Allison said, there's a delivery for you. I'm like, is it a big package? She goes, no, it's a tiny little envelope. I don't even remember what was in it. I think it was like a button. So they went through the whole thing to track the package from China. They sent it, a button, not a sewing machine. You know, I paid through PayPal. I got my money back. But these scammers are out there. And that's what happened to Joy today, too. So this is my year-end public service announcement. Don't be scammed. If it looks too good to be true, it is. Oh, there was one other I did. Okay, so this is also more than a year ago because I learned my lesson. So I kept seeing these posts again on Facebook. Don't ever buy anything from Facebook. And it said returned Amazon items, and they're showing a whole warehouse full of stuff and people with these boxes filled with electronics. And you could pick what size you want. You can get the mini box or you can get the jumbo box. And it was like $25 or $35 or something like that. And supposedly, I was going to get like a computer and a camera and a hard drive. And again, if it sounds too good to be true, it is. Same thing. They sent me the tracking and everything else, and it arrives. And what's there is, I thought I had the box still here somewhere, a selfie stick. And there was like one other $3 item in there. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So again, I filed a dispute with PayPal and showed them what they sent me and showed them the ad and what they had promised, and they refunded my money. But never again. Oh my God. So, but at least I thought that I was going to get, you know, I was purchasing an item. But this Bridget, so she says, I said, read the exchange. There's your answer. You've been scammed. She said, I told you I did something and I'm not scammed. I said, okay, tell me that in a month. And then she said, then get off my page. I said, bye. Oh my God. We as a nation are really stupid. We're really gullible. We're really fucking dumb. You know what, people? Stop it. Think. Use your brains. We used to lead the world in education and, you know, everything. But, oh, my God. So there's my little year-end warning about scammers. They're out there. And so I reported this agent, whatever his name is, to Facebook. I reported the page. I told them about the whole chat and everything. I've not heard a word. But I keep hearing from people who, like, I'm suspended from Facebook because I reposted something, some meme or so, you know, like bullshit things that they'll ban you from Facebook for life. But this kind of, you know, scam of taking advantage of people who are maybe missing a couple of bulbs from their chandeliers, it's just astounding to me. Just astounding. Oh, my God. All right. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. One other thing. Tomorrow's our last show of the year. It is New Year's Eve. I will be here. I don't have anything planned. I don't have a guest. I have some things I can play. I have like year-end stuff we could do. But so, you know, we're going to wing it tomorrow. Barbara Rice says, Bridget was in on the scam. She was trying to entice me. No, she wasn't, because she's a Facebook friend. And before I accepted her friend request, I saw her. I could tell she's a little slow. And I was being nice, but she's just not the brightest bulb up there. She's not part of the scam. She was not just some person. I believe she's been taken by these people. Ugh, God, I hate it. Durbin says, Nicole, but the U.S. has never led the world in class. That's true. Yeah, Sydney, I got temporarily banned from Facebook for criticizing fascist stuff. And T. Ron says, come on, Nicole, she's trying to scam you. She's not. I think she was scammed. I just think it's unfortunate. All right. Someone who's not going to scam us. How's that for a segue for you? Oh, I got to get Howie's intro up here. I wonder who's ready to mix up a batch of those Dirty Debbies, because it is that time of the week, you know? You know?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Ah, hello, Howie Klein.
Hey, how are you, Nicole?
I'm okay. Happy New Year's Eve Eve.
Yes, just like last year.
That's right.
Last week it was Festivus.
Right, it was Festivus Eve. Right.
But you don't have any fancy name for it on this time?
It's just New Year's Eve Eve. It's the day before New Year's Eve. So, as Thursdays are usually just Friday Eve. Because, you know, we know it's important, I guess. I don't know. I'm so ready for this year to end. Hey, by the way, Howie, your Bernie painting went out in the mail today.
Oh, wonderful.
And I did customize it for you. That's what took so long, because I couldn't get it right. But I think I did at the end. So I think you'll like it.
Good. Oh, I'm anxious to see it.
Cool.
It's funny, because I had a very, very large painting that I sent to a friend today, as a matter of fact. And now I have a spot.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, when it gets there, you have to take a picture of it on the wall so I can see how it looks.
Okay.
All right.
And in fact, the one that I sent, it went off to Florida today.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm sorry for it. Things are really weird down here. Have you heard about our governor?
Is he dead?
He just very well might be. He's missing. I can't play it off of that. The mayor of Orlando, whose last name is Demings, by the way. I don't know if there's any.
The husband.
That's what I thought.
Yep. Harry Demings should be running for higher office. He's really good. It's just he's married to a nitwit.
He's married to Val Demings, who thinks she's going to be the next senator, and will probably wind up with Marco Rubio again, unfortunately. But anyway, so Jerry Demings, the mayor of Orlando, did a press conference the other day asking, where is the governor? In fact, here's it.
Our residents, all Florida residents, should be outraged, and they should ask the question, now, where is our state? Where is our governor? Where is Ron DeSantis now?
Good question.
When was the last time you saw the governor do a press briefing regarding COVID-19?
Okay, well, the answer to that, it was around December 17th. So it's been about 2 weeks, right? And since he said anything, since he's made a public appearance, Florida today added 90 new deaths to our pandemic total. And the new report, 77,848 new COVID cases, a 66% increase from the record set yesterday.
Wow.
And Ron DeSantis is nowhere to be seen. His office, his spokesperson, finally weighed in and said, wait for it, he's on vacation. Where in the middle of a COVID crisis, his wife has breast cancer and is allegedly being treated for breast cancer, and they're on a family vacation during a horrendous COVID outbreak?
And he thought he was going to be able to do that without telling anyone?
Right. This is fishy on so many levels. I think old Ronnie boy, a moron, death sentence, may have gotten the COVID.
Yeah, that, a lot of people think that.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, just another day in Florida. Crazy, huh?
Very.
Yeah. So we have a guest here today. I know she's there because I saw her sign into a Zoom, but then, okay, now she's coming. There she is. I got to get your shot set up. So, Howie, while I get her shot set up, you want to explain who our guest is today?
Yes, I do. And our guest is first of all, her name is Summer Lee.
Yes.
Second of all, she's a state representative in Western Pennsylvania. Third of all, she's running for Congress now in Western Pennsylvania. She is the newest person endorsed by Blue America. So let's bring on Summer Lee. I can't say which district because they're still redrawing the district.
Oh, I see. Because what I saw, it said the 18th district, but that might change, huh?
Okay. Well, the number will change,
right.
Yes.
The number will change.
It's the Pittsburgh district.
Right. So, Summer Lee, here we go. I finally got our shot set up, I believe. Hopefully this works. Hey, Summer.
Hey.
Nice to see you. Thank you for joining us. So, Pittsburgh, and you're a state assembly person. So, is this Randall's district from This Is Us?
is that where they're from?
Yeah. He's like a councilman in Pittsburgh. He moved from Philly to Pittsburgh, and he's a councilman. So that was the first thing I thought of.
Prioritize watching that faster if I knew that.
Yeah, you should check it out. Just like check out the last season because that's he leaves his high powered like mega buck job to go be a councilman in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that's super realistic. Somebody who's not even from Pittsburgh just came and got a council seat.
Because they owned a building. They bought a building that his father lived in or something. I don't remember. But it made sense in the show. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I thought you'd enjoy it. Anyway,
see,
Summer.
Yeah, that would be that seat. I would hopefully be his congressperson.
There you go. So, welcome. The website is summer4pa.com. Summer Lee, so did you just jump in? How long have you been in the race? Tell us about what brought you here.
Yeah, definitely. So I didn't just jump in. I got in October. Huh? As Howie said, I've been a state rep since I ran in 2018. So kind of made a decision. I got in as an exploratory committee because, you know, we really wanted to make sure that, you know, there's an appetite and a momentum. And I think that it's very clear that in Western Pennsylvania, we have all of those things, right? We have a lot of opportunity. We have this area that we've been building this kind of political movement that's definitely changed the political environment and atmosphere in our region, right? So I think the time is definitely ripe. I think that people have been seeing us elect, finally, a black mayor, right? More progressives up and down the ballot, you know, whether it's school boards or county councils in ways that we've never done in Western Pennsylvania. And then we get a retirement from a 26-year incumbent. So it definitely felt time that we kind of build this to scale and kind of take the opportunity to use every electoral cycle as an opportunity to organize and expand the electorate and bring new people in. So that's how I got here.
Awesome.
And the incumbent isn't a bad guy. He's just, you know, just a sort of a regular garden variety Democrat. And yeah. And Summer is really, really progressive. And in fact, I wanted Summer to be able to introduce herself by telling our listeners what she's done
that that should make voters in this district want to go out and vote for her now? What because the person who wins the Democratic primary is the person who's going to be the next congressperson. There's you know, there'll be some Republican running, but just a, you know, not someone who can win.
Okay.
Yeah. This is a deeply blue area, right? Is primary takes all, but I mean, and proud to be a part of a movement that has, you know, when I first got in, when I first started running in 2018, we had, you know, just in the state house, we had one woman in our delegation. We had never had a Black woman serve from Western Pennsylvania in any capacity, right? Not just Congress, not the state house, right? In any capacity, right? So we ran, two progressive women ran together, right? We fundraised together and we shared resources and staff. And we really set out to show Allegheny County that you can do politics different, right? That having bold policies is really good, right? We need folks who are going to run unapologetically on, you know, Medicare for All or Green New Deal, housing justice and racial justice and economic justice, right? But more than that, we need folks who are going to show and prove that we need to and can do politics differently. So we did that. We won. We doubled the amount of women who were in there. I became the first Black woman. But since then, you know, I created a co-founded a PAC, an organization, right, that does unapologetically progressive politics in Western Pennsylvania, right? We only focus on progressives up and down, you know, the ballot, local elections, in races that we can actually come in and help communities, you know, as they are picking their people, you know, sending their leaders to their system. Like, how do we help them? Because oftentimes, you know, progressives, folks who come from poor and working class backgrounds, like, we don't have the resources to run. We don't have the resources to be taken seriously or pass the viability standards that the establishment sets on us. So we wanted to create an organization that could change the political structure. So we've been doing that in the last cycles. And, you know, we've helped get the first Black mayor. We've helped get county council folks. We've helped get a historic slate of judges, right? Magistrate and Court of Common Pleas, right? That's what we've been working on that really has changed, you know, Allegheny County and really shown that we can do a progressive politics and not just have a progressive policy.
That's great.
But tell us a little bit about the progressive policies as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think Allegheny County, Western Pennsylvania, right? This is the area that we heard a lot about this in the presidential race, you know, from all the candidates when they say that, oh, we can't support a Green New Deal because Western Pennsylvania. It's always because of Western Pennsylvania, right? We have the scapegoat for all the progressive things we cannot do. But we know that that's not true. We know that, you know, whether it's my campaign or other campaigns like it, we know that we've been knocking door to door. We've been talking about a Green New Deal, right? We've been talking about what a just transition look. We've been talking about environmental racism. We've been talking about Medicare for All, single payer healthcare, right? We've been talking about those things. We've been talking about economic justice, raising the wage, unions. You know, this is a union town. But we've been able to talk about what does it look like to have a labor movement that is actually reflective of our workforce, our labor force, right? How do we reconcile and grow our labor movement in a way that doesn't just stop at, you know, building trades or white male workers, but embraces and grows amongst Black folks and brown folks and women, right? Service industries and restaurant workers, right? We've been trying to do that work here in Pittsburgh. And we know that every door we knocked on here in, you know, Rust Belt America, right? Appalachia, this message, it resonated across, you know, my district, across districts like it. And it's a pretty diverse district, right? I didn't just come from a district that's like a progressive utopia. You know, I came from a district that is more suburb than city, way more white than Black. And I even had the one Trump ward, you know, in Pittsburgh. Right. And we went to that Trump ward and we talked about Medicare for All. Right.
And were they receptive?
Yeah, they were. No, the funniest thing, I knocked on the door. This was an area that I didn't think it would be friendly to me, right? I was worried about going to this area. I knocked on the door. The houses, this is the city of Pittsburgh, but some of the houses looked like it could be in like farmland. It was very strange. But I knocked on the door there and I got a family, you know, and I was telling them, you know, I was DSA endorsed back then, you know, progressive, like they failed with the socialism scare thing here, that kind of thing. So I'm talking about, you know, Medicare for All, we're talking about single payer healthcare system. He's like, you know, I got one problem with you. And I was like, oh, it's the single payer healthcare thing, right? He was like, oh no, God, no. He was like, my kid went to study abroad in Australia. We believe in socialized medicine.
Wow.
Right? Even in that neighborhood. And he was just like, oh, I had a problem with you. Didn't go to Pitt or something. It was just like some nonsense, right?
Oh, that you didn't go to Pitt?
Those communities, right? Those were voters who that neighborhood went for Trump. And wow. They were like, no, we believe in that medicine. We want health care.
I don't understand that disconnect. I mean, I guess you talking to people one-on-one can cut through that. It's the their blanket, you know, opposition to anything progressive seemingly, but then you get them one-on-one and maybe it's not such a stiff wall. Summerlee, I'm looking at your website. Again, it's summer4pa.com. And I made an observation a while ago when Howie's brought other candidates on, and it seems like the real progressives, the ones who are loud and proud about it, always put an issues page up on their website. The ones who aren't, the blue dogs, the conservadems, never go near the issues. You look on a website, and if there's no issues page, then you have to ask why not. But I go to your website, and there's issues, and you have environmental justice, economic justice and union jobs, criminal justice reform, Medicare for all, funding public education, reproductive health rights and justice, LGBTQ plus rights. You're not afraid to take this on and tell people exactly where you stand, and that's a good thing. Thank you for that.
I bet the DCCC doesn't like that much.
Right. Have you heard from the DCCC? Do they tell you not to do this?
No, I didn't. I haven't heard from them. They haven't. Right. I don't think that this is the type of race typically that they are going to want to kind of unload, you know, on. It's an open seat now. Right. The incumbent got out. And I think that they hopefully are not right. I think that they're probably more inclined to, at least for now, kind of see how it plays out and let it play out. So we haven't had that. I didn't know that people didn't have issues pages.
No, go look. Go look at some of the.
Ours is still in construction. We're about to drop more things. We want to, as we grow and build our campaign, right? We want to use that process to flesh that out even more.
Oh, great!
Deeper, right there on the website.
Well, and it should be that way. So people who are curious, they want to know what you're about. They can go to your website and they can read up on where you stand on the issues. Do this little experiment when you have a spare 20 minutes or so and look at the progressive people that you know who are running in their pages, and then look at the people like, oh, Sean Patrick Maloney, or you name it, any conservadem out there, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I'm in Florida. They do not go near the issues. Howie, can you explain why?
Yeah, well, they just want to run on mom and apple pie and the American flag, and they don't want. They feel if they talk about an issue, there'll be people who come from the other side of that issue, and they'll lose that vote. They'd rather just not talk about an issue and just run on the most common and easily accepted things, and just leave it at that. And that's what the DCCC tells them to do, and that's why the Democratic Party loses. All the time, almost the only time that a standard variety Democrat wins is when there's a blue wave. Otherwise, they can't win. Ugh. And we're not going to have a blue wave this time. If anything, there'll probably be a red wave. That's why we need real progressives like Summer to run and, you know, make something out of Congress. So we're not sitting around twiddling our thumbs while nothing happens and people get disappointed.
Right.
In fact, on that note, What do you think could have been done better since Biden became president?
You know, I think that's a really hard question, because I think that there's only one answer, right? Not one answer. I think that there's one kind of like root answer, and I think that transcends Biden, right? I think that the Democratic Party has to do some introspection, right? And I think that it's very clear that this is a system, or this is a party right now that is kind of struggling with serving two masters, right? I think that we're seeing, you know, a Republican Party that is gone, right? It is gone. And a Democratic Party that is having to reconcile its role that it's played in that, right? It's played a role, whether it's a blue wave or a red wave, right? There's a role that they've played in the erosion of the democracy that they like to talk about, that we talk about so much, right? Or low voter turnout, right? How have they contributed to that? And what are the steps that we're going to take to remedy that, right? It's exactly what you're saying, like that unwillingness to go and distinguish themselves. Who are you? What do you stand for? What are your values, right? And why don't we go and shout it to the world, right? If that's who we really are.
Right.
But there's a reason why, you know, people say politics are local. I don't always like the saying, but I do for this, right? People are more likely to trust somebody who they know right? And everybody should know a politician. Everyone should know someone who is running for something. They should hear from them. They should have the opportunity to know what they feel like and believe, right? And when you do that, there's you kind of restore trust, right? We've lost that because it's so blatant the ways in which, you know, they try to serve two masters, right? You can't serve corporate interests, you know, or the rich and also serve poor and working class people, right? We can't do both at the same time. So I think the thing that the party and we all, right, whether we're in it or not, but if we are progressive left of center folks, we are all going to have to reconcile that, right? Who are we serving? We have to force that reconciliation because it's not going to come by itself, right? But as we're forcing that reconciliation, we now make them say, this is who we are, this is where we stand. And now we can talk about how we're actually going to get there. You'll see people fighting differently then, right? When we decided that we are building power for and with working class and poor people, right? You will see that what happened with Build Back Better could not happen in that instance, right? It couldn't happen because we've now been so very clear about who we are. It now determines who gets to come in, right? Certain people won't be welcome anymore because they don't fit that.
Hmm. Right. And Chuck Schumer actually went, looked up who had the worst voting record in the entire Congress, in the House. And that was Kyrsten Sinema. She had the absolute worst voting record. And he picked her. He picked her to be the U.S. Senator from Arizona.
Right.
And chased everyone else out of the race so it would just be her. And she doesn't belong in the Democratic Party. She's you know, any solid Democrat would have won that race that year. And, you know, she's the one that we're stuck with, who's now holding back the whole Democratic agenda, along with Joe Manchin.
It's amazing. Can I suggest that the next person who interviews Chuck Schumer asks him what his reasoning was, why he picked Kyrsten Sinema to be the Senate candidate from Arizona? What could it possibly have been? I want him to be put on the spot to answer that.
It would be great if someone asked him that, but no one would, because then they would lose access to him.
And
he wouldn't do an interview with them again.
Ay, ay, ay. So, hey, Summer, I want to ask
you. You guys should do it. You just shoot your shot. You only need the one chance.
I know, right? Sometimes I think I should go up to D.C. and, well, not till COVID's over, but try to schedule some interviews. Summer, I want to ask you about Pennsylvania, because Pennsylvania is an interesting state. It's one that Donald Trump contested. You have Pat Toomey, who's retiring, so you've got an open Senate seat. You have your, hopefully, what will be your congressional seat that's an open seat. It sounds like things are changing there. Do you have any thoughts on the Senate seat and which way it's going to go?
Yeah, listen, the reality is, and I think y'all know that as much as I do, right, that's going to be a difficult seat, not just the Senate seat, but the governor's race too.
Oh, right.
You know, history. So we have a governor's race. That's an open seat. And there's never, you know, in the history of Pennsylvania, you know, been a time where the party who has had two consecutive terms has maintained it after that last governor, you know, is term limited. So, you know, history is basically saying that it's time for it to go back to Republicans unless we do something. Right. So that means that we have to be really serious about, like, if we're going to win that Senate race, they're going to need help from Pittsburgh, they're going to help from Philadelphia, right? Which means that we're going to have to drive up the numbers, because the reality is that it is a red. I mean, there are really red parts of this state.
Right.
And there are lots of folks who are left of center here too. But oftentimes we're the ones who don't vote because we don't feel like, and we're not wrong, right? Because no one comes and talks to us, right? Because we don't have candidates that speak to our needs. Because every single time, you know, someone says, you know, oh, well, I'll do this. And we come out, right? They throw us away, right? And we see the results of that. So we're going to have to rely on, like, this congressional race is important for that reason, right? If we can increase voter turnout, it helps the Senate race, right? It helps us get a better Senate candidate through to the general in the first place, right? Whoever folks might believe that is, but that's why we got to turn out progressives. And in my race, right, that's what we're going to be focusing on. You know, I helped to turn out I had helped a double in my first race. We doubled voter turnout. And in the second one, we had 50% turnout, right? Which was almost the highest in the Commonwealth.
Yeah, that's big.
We weren't doing special things. We were doing what all candidates should do. Talking to marginalized people, talking to poor and working class people. We weren't just listening to consultants and only mailing super voters, right? We went to everybody and it ended up helping, right? The Senate candidates are going to need that, right? They're going to need that sort of a push because, you know, Pennsylvania is not a gimme state. It is not an easy state
right.
to win. It's not an impossible state to win, right? We got the numbers, but we have to do the work. We have to earn those votes. The Senate candidates, the governor candidates, they're going to have to earn those votes. They're going to have to turn them out. And they exist, but...
Do you have any allies in those races?
I know most of the candidates running, you know. in our governor race, we only have one candidate. In the Senate race, you know, I know most of the candidates. As it turns to allies, right, I'm an ally of anybody who is earnestly fighting for poor working class people, right? For Black and brown folks. If your work and your politics are geared toward that, and you're like, you are organizing around that, you know, count me in, right? I'm that person. And I want to be that person with you. So anybody who does that, you got me, I'm with you. Right. And I think that, so I know the candidates, right? One of them is my neighbor and the other one is my colleague. So.
Okay, Howie, I know Blue America mostly focuses on congressional races, but occasionally, more lately, you have endorsed in Senate races. I don't know about governor races. Are you taking any stand in these Pennsylvania races?
We haven't so far. I mean, we've endorsed Fetterman in the past, and I think he's pretty good.
I like him. I like John Fetterman. Yeah. But, you know, I'm in Florida, so it doesn't really matter what I think.
Okay. Yep, we'll have to see.
Okay. But it's exciting. What you're saying is so true. You know, it seems to me as an outsider, the Democratic Party, what they try to do, you mentioned that they focus on those super voters. Well, there's a whole huge population of people who don't vote because they feel that none of the candidates speak to them. None of them represent them. And you can win by bringing all new voters into the system, showing them that, you know, you are represented. You will be represented here. We just have to participate. You got to get in it and vote. That's the challenge now.
Yeah, that's like the Joe Manchin and the Kyrsten Sinema syndrome, right? It's like our politics for decades, right, has been geared around, we've always been told that we have to move to the right, right? We have to cater to the right, right? We have to moderate, whatever that even means, right? But we see that play out in who's considered a super voter, right? Which voters are respected, right? When a progressive or a young person or a Black person doesn't come out and vote, right? They're ashamed sometimes. Instead of, you know, we're seeing candidates instead say, all right, I should treat them the way that I treat other swing voters, right? Because they might not be swing from Democrat to Republican. They might be swing from Democrat to non-voter.
Right.
Right. So what would it look like if we were putting the same sort of resources into the types of people who would vote for Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema? What if we were putting those same, you know, resources and efforts and catering policies and platforms around those types of marginalized people, young people.
People who don't vote.
Black and brown folks, working class folks, right? What if we were what if we were centering them in our politics, right? The same way that we center whoever is the moderate or the conservative, right? I think we would see a different national politics, right? We would see a different Congress. We'd have a different government if we're doing that. But because we haven't done that for so long, now we have Joe Manchin, who is now empowered to hold up everything.
Right.
No. And I'm not saying that the Republicans don't have some, they obviously, we expect them to do what they do. But we keep hearing that, you know, conservative Democrats are more loyal or more valued sometimes. Sometimes we signal that they're more valued, but here they are not standing on us when we need to.
That's
and that's
right.
Because we've empowered them through narratives, through messaging, through policies, right? We've empowered them to do that and to act this way. And we've left behind other voters who can be the base.
Right. And you're ignoring a huge segment of the population that will vote if you talk to them.
They will vote. If you center them, right? If you show that you care about them, if when you get in, if they've come out, you at least fight. We understand that we're not going to get everything, right? We understand, for the most part, how politics work. We get it. Like, there is another side they are fighting too. What we want to see is that y'all have the urgency, that y'all are going to fight the way that we have to fight if we are experiencing it, right?
Right.
If you're somebody who's living in a community or you're living the type of life where you're afraid to go to the hospital because the copay or, you know, how much your bill might be, you know, if you're afraid to quit your job and start your own business because you don't have healthcare, right? If you can't breathe because of the air quality, right? If you're those type of people, they fight differently. We want you to fight the way that we need you to fight, right? And that's what we're not seeing.
And
it's okay to fall short sometimes. It's not okay to not fight.
Exactly. Well, you have the right attitude. And so far, how are things going? You're picking up a lot of volunteers and getting donations, I hope?
Yeah. We are building out, right? We don't have maps yet. Yeah, this is really 2021. We do not have maps yet. So, you know, just gearing up for that, you know, hoping that they don't gerrymander our district, which, you know what, but we'll be ready for that, right? They might want to split the city of Pittsburgh, right? Because we know, again, what they do is they want to, you know, disempower urban center voters, right? Yeah. Urban center voters are more likely to be liberal or black or brown or progressive, right? And we're never somehow a community of interest, right? So we're fighting back against that. But for the most part, yeah, we have momentum and energy. You know, we've been raising small dollar donors. You know, we don't accept money from corporate PACs, from oil and gas, from big pharma. Not that they would give us any. I don't think they want to give us any, but we don't accept that. So we build one person at a time, you know, one community event, one house party at a time. So we're out, we're doing it. We have people who are like genuinely excited. So we're excited as we go into the new year.
Awesome. Her name is Summer Lee. The website is summer4pa.com. Same thing. I think that's her Twitter handle. Follow this woman. If you're in the Pittsburgh area, get involved. You, Summer, you're exactly what we need. We need another, you know, 100 of you, but, you know, we'll take you one at a time. Howie, thank you as always for bringing another great candidate here. You know, Howie does this. Blue America finds great progressive candidates. And I see, looking at the endorsement page on your website, you need to add Blue America on there, but you have all the biggies here. You have, Justice Democrats, the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, Democracy for America, Working Families Party. So you got the right groups on your side. Now we need to get everybody involved, volunteers, donors, voters. That's
important. Yeah, we went knocking doors, right? We went talking to people. You know, we don't win just with money, but we spend the money the right way. So we're going to go talk to people, right? We're going to bring in some new folks. We're going to talk to the folks who people say that you don't have to waste your time with, right? No, those are the people who are going to form our base. Those are the people we're going to build and organize with. So join us, right? Join us. And you don't have to just, thanks to COVID, right? You can join us from wherever you are. You can help us with text banking or phone banking, right? You can join our Zooms. You can bring people in, right? There are so many ways to help us reach the folks in our district who, you know, we really need to build with.
Right.
And we deserve someone who's going to build with them.
So go to the website, summer4pa.com. Howie, want to wrap this up?
Yeah, well, I mean, everyone who is listening to Summer just now is probably feeling a lot like the way I feel, and I'm sure the way Nicole feels. We want to see Summer in Congress so she can do the things that she's been talking about. I mean, there's no question in my mind that this is going to be a great, great member of Congress, not some backbencher who sits around and thinks about getting reelected every 2 years. That's not who we've been talking to today.
No, that was apparent the minute you started talking, Summer. You've got the energy, you've got the attitude, you've got the right ideas and the willingness to own it. You know, I'm over the candidates who is like, you know, give wishy-washy answers. You know, Howie, we were talking about our missing in action governor before, Ron DeSantis, who I call moron death sentence, who's missing. And now his office is now saying he's on vacation. Really, in the middle of the biggest COVID spike, Florida just went through the roof with the daily number of infections like doubling overnight. And he was asked recently, did you get boosted? And the way he hedged on the answer, just answer the fucking question, my God. So I love it that you are a straight talker. You say what you mean. We've had enough of politicians who dance around the issues. You gotta take them on full force and go for it. And you're great. I'm excited for your campaign.
Thank you. Thank y'all. Thank you both. Thank you so much for having me and for highlighting our campaign.
It was a pleasure. Really a pleasure and a jolt of energy.
Definitely. Thank you so much. It was great to meet you.
Likewise.
All right. And Howie, I guess we'll talk to you. And Summer's gone. Bye, Summer. And Howie, that was good. She's right? Back. Okay. No, she's still here. And Howie, we'll talk next week. It'll be a new year and same shit, different year, I guess.
We'll see.
We'll see. We can make it better. That's up to us, though. All right. All right. And so until next time, next year, we'll see you next Thursday. And Summer, hopefully we'll see you soon. Thank you so much. Howie, I'll talk to you next week.
All right, Nicole.
Okay.
Have a good new year.
You too. Bye. Happy New Year. And you guys, I'll see you tomorrow. I'll leave you with the news. Bye. we do this.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
As the pandemic enters its third year, the United States continues smashing previous records for the most daily new cases of COVID-19. On Wednesday, it topped 488,000. That's nearly twice that of the worst days from last winter, according to the New York Times. Wednesday also set a new record for the seven-day average of new daily cases, 301,000, up from 267,000 the day before. Dr. Michael Osterholm, director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy, warned over the next 3 to 4 weeks, we are going to see the number of cases in this country rise so dramatically that we're going to have a hard time keeping everyday life operating. In New York City, emergency responders are being inundated with 911 calls for fevers and coughs amid one of the worst COVID-19 outbreaks in the country. Reports that daily calls about COVID-like symptoms have doubled since the beginning of the month, even as some 30% of the city's 4,400 emergency workers called out sick on Wednesday. More than 110,000 New Yorkers have tested positive since Christmas Day. Wednesday set a new city record of 39,591 new cases. And at least one local hospital is putting off elective surgeries due to the crush of patients. The New York City subway also suspended the service on two lines on Thursday due to COVID-related train crew shortages. Here in Florida, the governor is missing in action. The mayor of Orlando has been demanding that DeSantis come out of hiding and help the state through its highest number of cases since the pandemic began, again, now entering its third year.
Our residents, all Florida residents, should be outraged, and they should ask the question, now, where is our state? Where is our governor? Where is Ron DeSantis now? When was the last time you saw the governor do a press briefing regarding COVID-19?
After the CDC this week amended its isolation guidance, cutting in half the recommended isolation time for people who've tested positive for COVID-19 from 10 days down to 5, nurses are fighting back. They're denouncing the new suggested guidelines. The American Nurses Association released a statement saying, quote, this guidance is premature given what is known about the Omicron variant and tips toward economic needs as opposed to the health needs of nurses and other healthcare workers. Well, we got another verdict. Ghislaine Maxwell was convicted Wednesday on sex trafficking charges. She was found guilty on 5 of the 6 counts. Each charge carries a prison term of between 5 and 40 years. The 60-year-old Maxwell had been accused of recruiting girls, some as young as 14, to come to the homes of millionaire sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, where he then sexually abused them. The incidents took place in the 1990s and the early 2000s at Epstein's properties in New York, Florida, and New Mexico. Epstein died, reportedly by suicide, more than 2 years ago while in jail awaiting trial. Maxwell's attorneys argued that their client was taking the fall because Epstein was dead. The New York jury deliberated for 5 days before reaching the verdict. That leaves one of the three end-of-year trials of high-profile women still to be decided. Kim Potter, the former cop who allegedly mistook her service weapon for a taser and killed Dante Wright, was convicted on all charges, first and second-degree manslaughter, last week. So the fate of former Theranos CEO Elizabeth Holmes is the one remaining case still up in the air. The jury has been deliberating for 6 days after 14 weeks of testimony. And don't expect a verdict before New Year's. The jury is now on break until Monday. The 37-year-old Holmes is facing 11 criminal charges, alleging that she duped investors and patients by hailing her company's blood testing technology as a medical breakthrough, when in fact, it was just a scam. If she's convicted, Holmes faces up to 20 years in prison. Well, President Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin speaking on a call Thursday afternoon amid tensions over Russia's military buildup on Ukraine's border. Putin reportedly requested the call, with National Security Council spokesperson Emily Horn saying that the leaders plan to, quote, discuss a range of topics, including upcoming diplomatic engagements with Russia. Biden reportedly plans to emphasize to Putin that in order to make real progress, talks must be held, quote, in a context of de-escalation rather than escalation. Putin apparently wants a legally binding agreement that Ukraine will not join NATO, but the U.S. and allies have so far refused. American and Russian officials plan to hold talks in Geneva on January 10th. And as we approach the first anniversary of the attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, Congressman Benny Thompson, who chairs the House Select Committee investigating the attack, has extended an invitation to House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy to speak with the committee. Chairman Thompson told ABC News, quote, "If McCarthy has information he wants to share with us and is willing to voluntarily come in, I'm not taking the invitation off the table." Those remarks came in response to an interview that McCarthy gave earlier this week when he said he doesn't have anything to add to the investigations, but, quote, wouldn't hide from anything either. Okay, well, then bring it on. I got the news. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is completely listener-supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.